Humanity had to be free. He wanted to be free, in control of his own destiny. There were at least two wars happening at once. The open war was between humanity versus the new men. The hidden war was between the android makers and humanity. The ancient Methuselah men, Strand and Ludendorff, also had their own agendas, if the professor was still alive, that is. While lost in thought, Maddox reached his apartment building 3/4 of an hour later. He tapped in his ID code and entered the main lobby. He paused a moment, inspecting his surroundings. A feeling of unease caused him to stare at various shadows harder than normal. After the drugged drink and the android incident, some caution might be in order. Maddox clicked open his holster, putting a hand on the gun butt. He rode the elevator that way. Fortunately, it was late and no one else entered the lift. Soon he sauntered down the corridor, pretending an easy manner, but wary just the same. He could spy nothing amiss, finding nothing to validate the unease. Reaching his door, he pulled his hand from the knob as if it was hot and stepped back. The unease had just intensified. With his fingertips, he brushed the door jamb, running his fingers around the length of the frame. There hadn't been any forced entry that he could tell. Could someone have used a key? He crouched, studying the lock. It didn't seem that anyone had tampered with it. Maddox drew the gun, readied himself, and tapped his thumb against the pressure lock. The door clicked open. With a foot, he pushed the door and hopped into the entryway. He stood, listening, opening his person for greater feelings of wrongness. The furniture was in the right spots. No items were misplaced, nor could he spy foreign objects. Quietly, he closed the door. His instincts told him something was wrong, but he couldn't see any evidence of that. For 2 minutes, he stood, waiting with his gun poised. What do I sense? Analyzing his senses, he realized it was just a feeling. No one had entered his apartment. If someone were hiding here, he would have detected it by now. Besides, he had countless security systems in place. Some sensors even watched outside, despite his being many floors up. Before leaving the first time to find victory, gunmen in an air van had attempted to ambush him in his apartment. With his gun ready, Maddox tiptoed through the rooms, moving like a great cat, straining his senses, traversing the entire complex, even checking the closets. He didn't find anything off. Could he be overreacting? He didn't like to think so. He was Captain Maddox. If he were going to start jumping at less than shadows, how would he ever help to defeat the new men and Strand? Muttering under his breath, he re-entered the living room, going to a small bar. He clunked the gun onto the countertop and poured himself a whiskey. One thing was for certain. He would not drink from a tainted source again. That had been foolhardy, messing with his mind. Maddox dropped the shot glass. It hit the countertop, spilling amber-colored whiskey. Then the glass rolled until it fell onto the rug. By that time, Maddox gripped the pistol again. He aimed it at a flickering image sitting on his sofa. The image was that of a man. It faded from view and then solidified once more. For just a second, Maddox's hackles rose. If this was a ghost... He almost fired a bullet through the now solidifying image. The medium-sized man wore a soft blue shirt with black slacks and shoes. The collar of the shirt was open and he wore a gold chain around his neck. The older man was bald, with deeply tanned skin and a prominent hooked nose. The man looked up, seeing him. Maddox was sure of it. The intelligence in the eyes shined like twin diamonds with a hard and priceless quality. The captain realized that he stared at a ghostly image of Professor Ludendorff. Chapter 6. Maddox blinked several times before rubbing the bridge of his nose. Carefully, he came around the bar with his gun aimed at the apparition. The thing had all of Ludendorff's features that had become so familiar during their time aboard the starship. Maddox could see the garments and the gold chain. The captain could also see through the phantom and the sofa behind the image.
"I'm quite real," Ludendorff said in his smug voice. "You aren't imagining this."
Maddox had steely nerves, but the voice proved to be too much, particularly because he was alone. The captain's trigger finger twitched. The gun went off, and a bullet plowed through the ghostly professor, smashing through the sofa and gouging the rug and the floor below. Bits of stuffing floated in the air, one particle traveling through the professor. The image hadn't flinched at the gunshot, but it noted the event.
"Was that truly necessary, Captain?"
Ludendorff asked. Maddox licked his lips before clamping down on his emotions. He disliked the fact of the discharge and silently reproved himself for overreacting. He had never believed himself superstitious before this. He planned to pass any further tests of this nature from now on.
"You're too quiet,"
the image of the professor said. Maddox cleared his throat, remembering more about Ludendorff. The professor was supposed to be the smartest man alive. He had first met the man on Wolf Prime, where the professor had held his own against the invading new men. Ludendorff had an inordinate curiosity about aliens, the ancient Addocs, the Swarm, and maybe the Builders, too.
"We don't have much time," the professor said. "I can't maintain the hollow image for long."
"Hollow image," Maddox said. "You're a hollow image?"
"Of course," Ludendorff said. "What else could I be?"
Maddox took a step back, glancing around.
"I'm quite alone,"
the hollow image of Ludendorff said. "How are you able to project yourself into my apartment?"
"It's a nifty trick, to be sure, but in the end, the technical aspect isn't as important as my message."
"I'm not sure I can agree," Maddox said.
"You're too contrary, sir. Just for once."
"For instance," Maddox said, interrupting the professor. "How do I know you're Ludendorff?" "Well, that's not the right question. You're not Ludendorff."
"Oh, but I am, my boy. I most certainly am. That's the wonder of the technology."
"What happened to you at the Nexus?" Maddox asked.
"Perfect, my boy. Just simply splendid," the professor said. "You have a way of jumping to the right conclusion at the first go. It always impressed me."
"You're evading the question."
"I assure you I am not. Now listen closely. Our time is limited."
"Professor, I mean, the image of the professor. Anyone could be projecting a hollow image of you into my apartment." Maddox snapped his fingers. "Is this Addoc technology? Did Dana find something aboard Victory to do this?"
"I'm surprised at your line of reasoning."
"Ah," Maddox said. "Maybe this is Builder technology." The hollow image clapped its hands, but failed to produce any sound.
"Now you're thinking again. Keep going on that track, my boy."
"What happened to you in the Xerxes system?"
"First, do you believe this is me speaking to you?"
"I don't see how," Maddox said.
"Nevertheless, how can I convince you this hollow image represents my true thoughts?"
"You want me to test you?" Maddox asked.
"It seems like the quickest way to gain your trust."
Maddox studied the smug hollow image. The thing had Ludendorff's manner down pat. Even so, who did you take with you from the Brahma system years ago?
"You're referring to Dr. Dana Rich, of course," Ludendorff said. "Is she well?"
"No, she's devastated by your disappearance." The hollow image frowned.
"I've recently learned that someone put a Ludendorff android onto Victory in my place. Did the creature do anything vile to poor Dana?"
"Your android tried to take over all of Star Watch," Maddox said. The hollow image blinked several times.
"Did it indeed? How did it—" "No, you won't tell me that. It would be restricted information. That means—"
The hollow image looked away as if thinking.
"Ah, it must have spoken about the Gilgamesh Covenant to the Lord High Admiral. Am I right?"
The hollow image was spot on, but Maddox wasn't going to tell it that. Maybe this was the reason for its appearance, to pump him for top-secret information. The captain did say, "A gunman assassinated you before you could complete your deception."
"Oh,"
the hollow image said.
"Did you witness the event?"
Maddox nodded. The hollow image rubbed its chin.
"Captain, let us quit this game. It's proving too long and tedious. Do you believe me?"
"Professor, I believe it's impossible for you to communicate like this unless the real Ludendorff is somewhere nearby."
"No, I'm in the Xerxes system."
Maddox raised his eyebrows. "Then this becomes doubly impossible. Are you suggesting you are communicating with me across many light years of distance?"
"No, no,"
the hollow image said.
"That would be preposterous, as you've suggested."
"Then what is this?"
"My engrams were imprinted."
"Like Galleon?" Maddox asked.
"Yes, that's it. I think like the real professor. He sent me. He sent the androids earlier in Shanghai to guide you to him. You should have trusted the androids, Captain. Destroying them wasted time, and it was foolish."
Abruptly, Maddox holstered his pistol. On unsteady legs, he staggered to a chair and sat down.
"You authored the androids?"
Maddox asked.
"I have just said as much," the hollow image told him. "Captain, do you believe this is me?"
Maddox shrugged. Then he straightened just as abruptly as he had sat down. "Yes, it's you, Professor. Only you would try such a harebrained scheme." The captain had decided it was time to hear the hollow image's plan. This back and forth wasn't going to produce any worthwhile results.
"Good, good. You always were a fast read, my boy. I suspect you realize this isn't me exactly, but a nearly perfect duplicate. I sent it from the Xerxes system because I'm physically trapped by automated builder machines of advanced complexity."
"Starwatch sent out a flotilla to clear out the Xerxes system," Maddox said.
"Did they now? That's interesting. For their sakes, maybe even for mine, the real Ludendorff, I mean. I hope they're successful. Clearly, it has taken time for the androids and hollow image projector to travel to Earth. You have no idea of the process involved."
"Why don't you explain it to me?"
"Lack of time prohibits me, my boy. I need you to help me at once. I'm physically trapped, and I doubt any Star Watch flotilla will know enough to free me from confinement. In fact, I doubt they will survive the surprises in store for them."
"You're obviously suggesting I take victory to the Xerxes system to free you."
"Of course,"
the hollow image said.
"What other vessel could succeed?"
"A Star Watch fleet."
"Yes, yes. Of course a fleet could annihilate every drone and pulverize each booby-trapped asteroid. But I doubt the Lord High Admiral would send such a fleet to the Xerxes system at this time. Strategy dictates his next move. He must send a massed fleet to C Quadrant. He must liberate captured Commonwealth planets. As he does so, he will, of course, be searching for the throne world. To win the war, Star Watch has to take the fight to the enemy and occupy the new men's homeworld."
"What are the throne world's coordinates?" Maddox asked. "Surely you know."
"Of course, I know."
The hollow image blinked repeatedly.
"The professor must have anticipated your question, the sly devil. The real professor did not impart the throne world's coordinates to me. I believe Ludendorff has the highest survivability quotient in the galaxy. I'm sure he will give you the coordinates once you free him from captivity. In a word, the knowledge you seek is a carrot to help goad you to action."
"It makes perfect sense that the engrams of the professor should boast about Ludendorff's greatness," Maddox said quietly. "Tell me something, Professor. Why use coercive androids to drug me and take me to the Lin Ru?"
"Secrecy, for one thing,"
the hollow image said. "The sting in Wu Tower had the feel of a kidnapping mission."
"You were quite safe, Captain, I assure you. Each android allowed you to destroy it rather than harm you. Surely you realize each of them could have easily incapacitated you." I have a knot on the back of my head that says otherwise.
Could you explain that?
Maddox told the hollow image how the first android had slammed against him, propelling him hard against a refrigerator.
Ah, that's perfectly understandable and explainable, the hollow image said. The android miscalculated. It must have been trying to disarm you, lest you hurt yourself.
Of course, Maddox said dryly. The hollow image hunched forward.
I know you think you're very clever, Captain, and in many ways your intellect matches mine, at least in the areas of security. But I am your mental superior in a host of avenues. You need me. Star Watch needs me. Do you know that Strand is a Methuselah man, one of the originals just like me?
I've learned that, yes.
You have? Oh, splendid, splendid. This is better than I realized. Strand will defeat Star Watch if you give him enough time.
The throne world seems to think otherwise.
They're wrong, my boy. Star Watch needs me to help them find the throne world, but more importantly, to capture Strand. I used to work with him, and then I let him go his own way when we disagreed. Now I realize that was my greatest error. I have struggled these past months to make the supreme effort. Now I need you to trust me enough to come and get me. Strand is free, and I'm not. That could mean the end of regular humanity. I believe that would be one of the greatest catastrophes possible. It's much too soon to rely on human survival with a genetically narrowed, mutated species.
You mean the new men?
My boy, you have no idea of the real danger. I cannot tell you yet. But the new men have a terrible Achilles heel. They need regular humanity. We'll need them for generations to come.
I'm tired of these oblique hints, Maddox said. What is their Achilles heel?
You must hurry to the Xerxes system with Victory and enter the Nexus. I'm inside at 12-3-BB. Can you remember that?
I already have, Maddox said. But I don't know what your coordinates mean.
You will at the right time. Hurry, Captain. I don't think I can remain lucid for many more months. I'm counting on you to reach me in time. If you fail, I doubt for humanity's future. I hope I've convinced you of the seriousness of the mission.
No, I believe the opposite. The hollow image began to fade. Professor, you have to tell me more.
I see I'm going to need emotive reasoning. Very well. Do this one thing for me, Captain. Ask Dana, when will we see the new Hindu Kish again? She'll understand the reference. Then maybe you'll know that I'm telling you the truth. Goodbye, Captain, and Godspeed. I look forward to your arrival.
A moment later, the hollow image was gone. The bullet hole in the sofa, the only reminder that it had been there. Chapter 7 Sergeant Riker grumbled. He flew the flitter through the darkness, his eyes heavy with the need for sleep. 15 minutes ago, the captain had woken him from blessed slumber just after he'd finally nodded off after the long drive across Asia. For insurance and following his secret orders, Riker had called the brigadier's office before heading to the flitter. The Iron Lady hadn't been in. She was at home, sleeping, as any normal person should be doing this time of night. Major Stokes had been on call.
The captain is fit for duty, Sergeant, Stokes had assured him. The doctor gave him a pass. Is there any particular reason you're calling me?
Riker still didn't know if he'd done the right thing calling the brigadier's office. He plucked a tall cup of coffee from a holder and took a sip. It was still too hot, but it tasted mighty fine. He needed a caffeine hit if he was going to drive the flitter without crashing.
I'm just checking in, sir,
Riker had told the major. That hadn't been completely truthful.
Couldn't you have waited until later this morning, Sergeant?
It is morning, sir.
Are you getting cheeky?
Stokes had asked.
No, sir, thank you, sir. Couldn't sleep, you know. I was trouble for the captain.
Ah, Stokes had said. The point was that Riker had lied to a superior officer. That was a foolish thing for an enlisted man to do, especially a sergeant of his long standing. But there were conflicts of interest here. Any reasonable person could see that. Riker took another sip. He liked his coffee hot with plenty of additives, sugar being his favorite. The captain had told him on more than one occasion the evil of continuous sugar consumption. It rotted the insides, aged a man, according to the captain. As he drove the flitter into Geneva, the sergeant snorted to himself. It was funny, really. He liked sugar, and it rotted his insides, and he was the one who was going to live long enough for it to be a problem. The captain, on the other hand, lived too dangerously. The man might be a genius when it came to combat and intrigue, but the truth was that Maddox was too rash by half. Riker knew he was supposed to temper the captain's worst excesses.
Why did I lie to the major?
Riker made a face. It wasn't hard to understand. Captain Maddox was family. The sergeant had his nieces in the Tau Ceti system, but he hadn't seen them for years. He expected they had kids by now. He should really go to Tau Ceti to see the young brats.
Don't have the time, Riker muttered.
He suspected that when he did have time, he'd be dead. The nieces were his blood. He thought about them often, realizing why he did what he did in the service. It was old-fashioned duty, the need to protect. Old Sergeant Riker was a sheepdog, trying to protect his loved ones from the wolves out there. Riker tapped the controls, taking the flitter down into Geneva. The captain was supposed to be waiting on the roof of his apartment dwelling. The man had barely gotten home, and now he wanted to dash off on some fool mission he just thought of. It was inconsiderate of the captain to call so late, or rather, so early. It was hardly 3 a.m. Geneva time. The sergeant exhaled through his nostrils before taking a long gulp of the sugary coffee. The jolt of caffeine would hit soon. He yearned for it, wanting the sleep gone from his eyes and sluggish mind. Riker would be true to his blood, giving his life for his nieces if that's what duty called for. He didn't have to see them, for that to tug at his heartstrings. His Star Watch family, though, that was different. He believed in duty to country and unit. Even more, he believed in helping his military family. The voyages in Starship Victory had forged an unbreakable bond between Captain Maddox, Lieutenant Valerie Noonan, Second Lieutenant Keith Maker, Dr. Dana Rich, Meta, Galleon the AI, and himself, Sergeant Tregason Riker. They were family in the best sense of the word, struggling against the universe as a team. Riker did not get teary-eyed over the concept. He was a military man who had fought with his family. He might present a dour face to most people. Others might think of him as a gruff old man. But the central focus of his ideals led him to view the crew of Victory as his family through thick and thin. If that was a cliché older than the hills of Earth, so be it. Riker never wanted to let the captain down, never wanted the man's death on his hands because he hadn't done his best. But damn it, sometimes the captain made things difficult because he raced here and sprinted there as he tried to solve impossible puzzles. Sometimes one had to lie down and go to sleep like a normal person. Why did Maddox get into so many strange predicaments? It was enough to make a philosopher out of a sergeant. He crumpled the empty cup and shoved it into the dispenser. Then he adjusted the controls one more time, bringing the flitter onto the roof, where Captain Maddox paced. Riker peered at the captain in disbelief, having just heard his instructions. Maddox appeared not to notice the scrutiny. Finally, the captain looked up.
Is there a problem, Sergeant?
The Mid-Atlantic, sir, in the flitter?
We've made the trip before.
Yes, but Dr. Rich will be asleep when we reach there.
No matter, Maddox said.
Couldn't you just call her, sir?
I don't see how.
The place is restricted, I realize that. Do you have permission to enter?
Sergeant, you handle your end of the matter and I'll handle mine.
Riker hesitated just a moment longer.
Yes, sir, he said.
The dome slid shut, the engine purred, and the flitter lifted from the roof of the apartment building.
"Wake me when we're 100 kilometers from the landing site," the captain said. "You going to sleep, sir?"
"Are you tired?"
"I'm exhausted, sir. The trip from Shanghai took it out of me."
"I suggest you switch on the autopilot and take a cat nap."
"I can't do that, sir. I drank an express cup of Java."
"That's a pity," Maddox said, crossing his arm and leaning against his side. Almost immediately, the man fell into a rhythmic breathing pattern.
"He's asleep," Riker realized with frustration.
The sergeant thought about putting the flitter onto autopilot, but he didn't trust the flight mechanism. Maybe in a bigger ship it would be all right. For this little air car, he preferred to keep at the controls. For a couple of 100 kilometers, Riker stared out of the canopy. Far beneath them, Europe slid past. As the air car darted over the Atlantic, Riker yawned. Despite the shock of caffeine, he was dead tired. His eyelids had become heavy. Maddox continued to sleep. Riker put a comm jack in his left ear and a sub-vocalizer onto his throat. Then he turned on the comm, sending a signal to Victory. The ancient Adok starship was in Earth orbit. A tech crew was aboard the starship working under Lieutenant Noonan's direction. She guarded the scientists prowling through the vessel, keeping Galleon company and calming him when the AI became mulish over something.
"Hello,"
Riker said, so softly he couldn't hear the words himself. He didn't want to wake the captain.
"Sergeant Riker," Galleon said in his robotic voice. "It is good to hear from you."
"Likewise, I'm sure,"
Riker said.
"You are with Captain Maddox, I see."
"We're heading to the mid-Atlantic."
"I suspect you are going to visit the doctor. I should inform you that she is in a restricted area."
"That's why I'm calling," Riker said.
"I do not process clearance powers," Galleon said.
"I know," Riker said.
He also knew the alien AI had a fantastically powerful deductive probability analyzer.
"I'm wondering why the captain plans to go there without pre-approval."
"You should ask him."
"He might tell me to mind my own business," Riker said.
"Would that bother you?"
"Not at all," the sergeant muttered.
"One moment, please," Galleon said. "Ah, is that a joke?"
Riker felt himself redden.
"One moment," Galleon said. "Oh, I believe you just lied to me, Sergeant."
"Now see here, Galleon, you have no right."
"It is possible that you just lied to yourself. Why does the captain's possible censure trouble you?"
"Galleon."
"Am I intruding into areas I should not?" the robotic voice asked.
Riker peered out of the canopy. He had a strange family, all right. Sometimes he wondered if he would have been happier working with normal intelligence people.
"I will work on the clearance for you," Galleon said.
"I don't want you to."
"It is my way of apologizing to you for intruding where I should have left things alone."
"I just thought of something," Riker said. "You can track us, right?"
"Of course," Galleon said. "I have been doing so since I took your call."
"Were you tracking the captain during his time in Shanghai?"
"Lieutenant Noonan said I must respect people's privacy. Therefore, I was not."
"I agree with her," Riker said. "But there's something odd going on. I want you to track the captain for the next few days."
"I am supposed to inform him of that first," Galleon said.
"Even if we're trying to throw a surprise party for him?" Riker asked.
"Valerie did not tell me of this party."
"Oh," Riker said. "That's right, I wasn't supposed to tell you."
"Why not? Have I done something to upset the captain?"
Riker shook his head. Why couldn't the AI make this easy? The Adok artificial intelligence asked too many questions.
"Galleon, would you just do this for me? I'll explain later."
"Yes, Sergeant. I will continue to track the captain. Would you like me to continue to track you as well?"
"Yes," Riker said.
He thought about the captain's androids and the brigadier's order to have Maddox examined to make sure he was still human. If the enemy had struck at the captain, might he strike at a lowly sergeant, too? If an android took his place, it would be an easy matter to capture the captain. Well, an easier matter, at least. At that moment, the flitter's engine simply cut out. It must have affected the batteries, too. The comm unit quit. The air car lost its motive flight with the loss of power. It plowed ahead a short distance due to the momentum. Then, the flitter began to plummet toward the ocean. Chapter 8. Riker didn't shout or frantically test switches. For a moment, he just stared at the dead board. There was no question the flitter's electronics had stopped working. The sergeant glanced outside. They were up a ways, so he had several seconds to get the machine working again. Methodically, he began the initiation procedure, which did nothing positive. For another second, Riker sat still, debating if he should wake the captain or not. Maddox slept soundly so far. That would change soon as the atmosphere outside began to whistle past the dome. There was a soft jar, although nothing came on inside. The flitter's nose lifted as the air car continued its flight, but without any internal power. The dash was as dark as ever. The sergeant's brow furrowed. How could the flitter be flying? Oh, right. Galleon must be using a tractor beam from orbit. The AI could do more than simply pull a craft closer, but use the tractor beam to guide the flitter. Muttering under his breath, Riker pried open the panel. It took him 15 minutes of sweaty, delicate work, but he found a strange little timer where one shouldn't be.
Don't touch that, Maddox said.
The sergeant grunted, lurching back, surprised at the captain's voice. Maddox glanced outside, at the dark dash, and then at the sergeant.
You managed to contact Galleon, I take it.
Yes, sir, Riker muttered.
Maddox frowned.
You must have contacted him before the event.
Right again, sir.
Maddox nodded. He took a small penlight from a pocket, clicked it on, and shined it on the tiny timer in the electronics.
Do you know what that is, sir?
Another complexity, the captain said. Did you take the flitter to the shop after our Asia flight?
That's standard procedure, sir, especially after a cross-country jaunt from Shanghai to Geneva.
Then we must presume someone hostile to Star Watch had access to the craft while in the garage, meaning this was an inside job. Ah, look at this.
Riker leaned forward, peering at the tiny device.
Did you see the dot on top? Maddox asked.
I do, sir.
That is the activation mechanism.
It's unlit, sir.
The timer must have absorbed energy from the flitter's electronics. It's a kill switch. The lack of energy also deactivated the timer.
I'd gathered as much, sir.
Does Galleon know our destination?
He does, sir.
Maddox pursed his lips.
Give me the gist of what you told Galleon.
Riker did so. Maddox studied him afterward, making the sergeant uneasy.
From now on, Sergeant, you will inform me if you put any spy systems onto me, including Galleon.
I'll try my best, sir.
That isn't a reassuring answer.
I suspect not, sir.
Riker said, who heartily disliked his secret orders. They explicitly said he could not reveal them to the captain.
What is it? Maddox asked. What's wrong?
Nothing, sir, Riker said.
Maddox fixed those strange eyes on him and gave him a level stare. The sergeant could feel the captain's mind spinning. The man had an uncanny ability to come up with answers. A hint of a frown appeared on the captain's face.
I see, Maddox said.
Riker swallowed uneasily. The captain couldn't have logically figured out the secret orders, could he? Maddox turned away, tapping a finger against a knee.
I'm still on the list, am I?
List, sir?
Riker asked.
You've been sworn to secrecy, I presume. Yet the secret command troubles you. That's small comfort. How am I supposed to...
Sir?
Riker asked.
Never mind, Maddox said. You shall carry on as ordered, and I will do my duty to Star Watch as my conscience dictates.
Riker knew the lad as well as anyone did. While the sergeant didn't have exalted brain power like Ludendorff and Dana Rich, he was experienced in human nature. The secret order cut against Maddox, wounding him, although the captain would never admit it to anyone. He was a proud young officer. Maddox was also a loner by inclination and circumstance. His hybrid nature hadn't done him any favors in this regard.
Are you with me, Sergeant?
Maddox asked softly. Riker knew what the captain was asking.
100%, sir, he said.
Even if...
Maddox left the question unasked.
Yes, sir, Riker said. Even if...
Maddox nodded curtly. He couldn't show anyone how much the answer meant to him.
Then let us proceed.
He regarded the kill switch timer with a pen light in one hand and a small caliper in another. Delicately, the captain reached in and plucked the sabotage device out of the interior dash system.
Take this, Maddox said, handing Riker the pen light.
Riker shined the narrow beam on the spot. Maddox reached in and twisted several loose wires together. The flitter shuddered, the engine kicked on, and lights reappeared on the dash. The captain tapped the comm unit and made an adjustment. It crackled into life.
Galleon, Maddox said.
I have analyzed the situation, Captain, the robotic voice said. You are a victim of sabotage.
Thank you, Maddox said. I have taken care of the situation. You may release us from your tractor beam.
Yes, Captain.
And Galleon, Maddox said.
Sir.
Thank you for your quick action. It saved our lives. We're indebted to you.
It was my pleasure, Galleon said.
The AI paused before adding,
I am eager to renew our adventures. Earth orbit has become unbearably tedious. This episode tonight shows me I should be engaged in hot action, using my rarefied abilities to defeat humanity's enemies.
I'll keep that in mind, Maddox said.
That is the best thanks of all, then, Galleon said. Do you wish me to begin analyzing possible suspects?
I do, Maddox said.
Wonderful. Thank you, sir. It will help relieve the tedium of listening to the scientists rhapsodize about my past. It is not what I have done which interests me, but what I'm going to do in the future.
Galleon, Riker asked, have you gained clearance for us yet?
I was just about to tell you. Dr. Rich has surfaced and left for Geneva. She is on a supersonic flight. I would suggest this means Dana has found evidence of past alien intrusion on Earth. I would love to ingest her data. Do you think I could listen in to her briefing?
Riker sat back with a groan, massaging his eyes. He couldn't believe this. Dana had left for Geneva? He could have been home asleep the whole time.
Turn us around, Sergeant, Maddox said.
To Geneva, sir? Riker asked.
Exactly.
The sergeant hesitated, waiting for the captain to tell him he was sorry for having interrupted the sergeant's sleep time. Maddox did no such thing. Instead, the captain leaned his head back against the bubble canopy and closed his eyes, falling almost instantly asleep. Muttering to himself, Riker adjusted the flight path, heading back for Europe. He might even have turned on the autopilot and gone to sleep, but thinking about what Dana had uncovered kept him too edgy. Was Galleon right? Had the good doctor found real evidence of past aliens on humanity's home planet? Had the builders been here in ancient times? Riker wanted to get to Geneva and find out the news.
Chapter 9.
Dr. Dana Rich stared out of the jet's window. It was bright morning in Western Europe, the sunlight bathing the beautiful Alps. She had just woken up from a light slumber, having made the trip from the mid-Atlantic in a little over an hour. The doctor wore a red jacket and had let her dark hair cascade past her shoulders. It was presently tousled from her sleep. Dana was in her late 30s and strikingly beautiful with brown skin and dark eyes. Born on Earth in Bombay, India, she had emigrated to the Indian Brahma system with her parents. A few years later, she had been the smartest student in the university system there, a girl in a world filled with boys. She had fled Brahma in the company of Professor Ludendorff, having lived with him on Brahma, creating a scandal for her family. The affair had ended in time, and Dana had found herself back in the Brahma system. There, she had worked for the Secret Service against the Rigel Social Syndicate, a neighboring star system. Dana had been a clone thief, caught by Star Watch in the end, and sent down to Loki Prime, the worst of the Commonwealth's prison planets.
Captain Maddox had rescued her because he'd needed her services. For what she had done to help bring back victory from the beyond, Star Watch had pardoned her of crimes. She had led the science team the first time in the Oort Cloud studying victory. After the professor, Dana knew more about the ancient starship than anyone else did. Because of her intellect and daring, she had uncovered old ship systems in victory that had gone a long way to defeating the alien destroyer in the solar system. Since then, she had spent many hours trying to uncover yet more deactivated ad hoc ship systems. Finally, having found nothing like her previous discovery, she had asked to work on the alien project in the Atlantic. Star Watch had reluctantly agreed. They were much more concerned with finding solutions to present problems than reconstructing the past. But Dana had insisted on the work, and given her previous successes, Star Watch had agreed. Dana had a different philosophy on the importance of the past than most others did. In her opinion, humanity knew too little about the Builders. Galleon had given some new data, but that had been sketchy. The mechanical people had aided the ancient Addocs against the Swarm, but the Builders had remained mysterious to them, preferring to work in the shadows. In the end, Galleon had given them more Addoc legends and myths than facts about the Builders, or mechanical people, as the Addocs had called them. The Builders were a mystery indeed. Surely they could not have begun as cybernetic beings. They must have been fully biological at one time. So far, though, the evidence had proved otherwise. From what Dana could tell, the Builders had been watchers, dabbling with the Addocs and humanity, constructing the Silver Pyramids but having no known planets. They had fought the ancient aliens who had made the destroyers, and they seemed to have disliked the strange Swarm. As Dana sat in the seat, she rubbed her hands in anticipation of the coming meeting. Yes, she was concerned about the greater war against the new men. She also feared Strand, realizing he might be the greatest danger of all. Yet, like the professor, ancient aliens absorbed her intellect. That was why she had gone to the bottom of the sea in the mid-Atlantic to join the Atlantis Project, the renamed Alien Project. What they had found down there, it was amazing if one looked at it the right way. Could she help convince the Star Watch Oversight Board that the scientists down in the mid-Atlantic needed more funds and equipment? 2 hours later, Dana stood before a lectern fingering a data chip. The oversight officers would appear soon. Over a comm, she had finally convinced them of the need for an emergency meeting. Jotting notes on a piece of paper, she was in the process of deciding on the precise wording of her opening monologue. Hit them between the eyes from the beginning, Dana liked to say. Grab them by the nose and twist if you have to. That kept people awake no matter what they really believed. The nose grab, in her opinion, was the Atlantis Project. Real buildings and artifacts existed down there, alien in nature. She suspected the Builders had constructed an Earth base in the distant past. If the scientists could dig deeper, Dana expected to extract ancient Builder technology. That was the nose twist. In the war against the new men, each new tech could be the piece that turned the tide of the war fully in the Commonwealth's favor. The similarities she'd seen down on the seafloor compared to other Builder tech she'd seen, they were very similar. Now, it was true that most of the others in the Atlantis Project disagreed with her analysis, but that was because they were fools. They shied from the truth because the implications could upset their pet theories about human development. What if humanity was a special project of the Builders? What if the world's religions all went back to shadowy remembrances of the alien cybernetic organisms? That would upset the main religions, but what did Dana care about that? She wanted to get to the truth, not continue to follow ancient myths. What if she began her monologue like this? Dana began scribbling the idea on paper. A door opened as she wrote. She looked up with a scowl. The meeting wasn't supposed to start for another half hour. She needed the time. "Captain Maddox," Dana said, surprised.
Hello, Doctor, the captain said a bit breathlessly. Had he been running?
Sergeant Riker,
Dana said with a smile. The older man panted, coming through the door behind Maddox.
It's good to see you two scoundrels. Have you come to hear my report?
Maddox stared at her before saying,
When will we see the new Hindu Kish again?
It took a second. Then Dana's eyelids fluttered. She exhaled as if the captain had just punched her in the stomach. She took several steps back, rubbing her stomach as her features stiffened. It felt as if all the air seeped out of her lungs. She grew faint, and it seemed as if she was falling backward. The next thing she realized was sitting on a chair with Maddox peering at her from another.
What?
Her mouth was dry. She frowned, looking up at the lectern. The last thing she remembered was standing behind it. How had she gotten here?
Did I faint?
She asked.
No, Maddox said. But you were vacant-eyed for several seconds. I helped you sit down.
Do you recall the saying?
The words slammed home again. When will we see the new Hindu Kish again? How dare the captain speak such words to her? They were some of the most intimate words Ludendorff and she had ever shared. The last time Ludendorff had spoken them. She straightened.
Where is he?
She asked, hope flaring in her heart.
Excuse me? Maddox asked.
Don't play dumb with me, Captain. I know you know what I mean. It's clear you've spoken to Ludendorff. I demand to know what else he told you.
Dana glared at him.
He gave you those words. No one else could possibly know them. He told you to tell me in order for there to be no doubt it was him. He wants me to go to him, is that it? Where is he? I demand you tell me this instant.
I see, Maddox said quietly. He spoke the truth. It really was Ludendorff. That changes the equation.
Captain,
she said in a warning tone. Maddox studied her. She hated when he did that. I spoke with a hollow image of Ludendorff. The captain proceeded to tell her of the hollow image claiming to be her ex-lover. At the end of the story, Maddox waited.
What am I supposed to say to that?
She asked.
Was the hollow image from the professor?
Yes, without a doubt, she said.
Could an enemy have subdued the professor, forced the engrams into an AI unit, and then catalogued the needed secrets via machine?
You have a suspicious turn of mind, she said.
I am an intelligence officer when all is said and done.
Are you implying Strand did this?
She asked.
He seems like an obvious candidate, or a builder.
Dana looked away.
I don't think it was a builder.
Your evidence being what?
According to my studies on the Atlantis project, the builders were exceptionally peaceful. They abhorred violence.
Yet they developed weapons and fought wars, Maddox said.
Your first assumption is correct. I do not agree with the second.
They used proxies then, Maddox said. Their minds still guided the conflict.
I believe you are wrong again, Dana said.
Maddox grew thoughtful. Finally, he shook his head.
The evidence does not support you.
The more I find out about the builders, Dana said, the more I believe that other species bewildered them with their bent toward violence.
Maddox continued to stare at her. Abruptly, he stood.
Where are you going?
She asked.
It's time I laid this before the Brigadier. We need victory, and we need to hurry to the Xerxes system. I have to reach the professor before whoever set the timer in my flitter reaches Ludendorff first.
What do you mean?
She asked. Maddox disappeared through the door without answering. Riker glanced at her and then at the door. The sergeant jumped to his feet, waved goodbye, and ran after the captain. Chapter 10
No! Brigadier O'Hara said. It's out of the question, absolutely not.
Maddox sat in her office in front of a synthy wood desk. He had just finished explaining his encounter with the hollow image, the reaction of Dana Rich to when will we see the new Hindu Kish again, and made his request to take victory to the Xerxes system and rescue the professor.
Excuse me, please,
O'Hara said in a softer tone. I did not mean to shout at you.
She patted her gray hair and straightened her uniform.
You surprised me, Captain. Surely you can see this is a trick to lure you and Victory to the Xerxes system.
That was my initial response as well, ma'am. Dana's reaction has changed my mind.
Well, it hasn't changed mine.
If you could have seen her.
That doesn't matter,
O'Hara said.
Your first suspicion was the correct one. Frankly, I'm surprised at you. Isn't it obvious someone wishes to isolate Victory in a possibly hostile star system?
Star Watch sent a flotilla under Port Admiral Hayes. If anyone could have cleared out the ancient drones...
Yes, yes, old Admiral Hayes is as clever as they come,
O'Hara said.
But this is the Xerxes system, a notorious star system that everyone has avoided for decades. It's legendary in its danger. Hayes has orders to proceed with extreme caution. It's likely his flotilla is at the outer edge of the system, still collecting data on possible enemy star cruisers.
Victory can help him, Maddox said.
The Lord High Admiral doesn't want Victory anywhere near any conflict for the near future. We must discover ways to duplicate the starship's disruptor beam. So far, that has eluded our best people.
This could be critical, Maddox said.
In this, I can't agree with you. Critical is having an alien destroyer readying its beam to annihilate Earth. Critical is a new man armada about to obliterate the last mobile Star Watch fleet. Freeing Ludendorff does not fall into that category.
I think you're wrong, ma'am. Ludendorff knows more than anyone except for Strand.
Exactly,
the Iron Lady said.
Ludendorff may be too dangerous to rescue. He may have sent the Ludendorff android in his place. Why did he use androids to kidnap you in Shanghai?
He said, for secrecy's sake.
O'Hara made an uncharacteristically rude noise.
Captain, I believe whoever used the hollow image is playing on your overactive curiosity. That means we must do exactly the opposite of what they're suggesting.
That seems far too timid, Maddox said.
Perhaps it does to the man who knowingly drinks drugged Mickeys.
Maddox sat back, surprised by her vehemence.
Maybe we should ask the Lord High Admiral his opinion.
Oh, that is neatly done, sir,
O'Hara said.
You are trying to jump over my head in my presence. I do not appreciate that in the slightest.
Maddox licked his lips. He had never seen O'Hara so worked up about an issue. The Iron Lady stood, putting her fingertips on the desk, scrutinizing him coldly. Slowly, her shoulders deflated. She slumped back into her chair and swiveled around. Maddox was more confused than ever. A minute later, she turned back. Her eyes had become red-rimmed.
Ma'am,
Maddox said with concern.
Are you well? You're a foolish young man. Do you know that?
Maddox did not know how to answer that.
You run off on an outrageous quest, return with a magnificent starship, leave again and defeat an alien destroyer against all reasonable odds. Some might say, let Captain Maddox go and do another mythic feat. I say, the odds have become too long. One of these times, events will overpower your good luck, and you'll die. Do you want to die, Captain Maddox?
I do not, he said.
There's your answer,
she said.
But someone has to shield you from your foolhardy desires to race off into danger. We will not go see the Lord High Admiral. This hollow image is a lethal trap, meant to take you away forever. I know. I can...
You can what, ma'am?
This may sound theatrical to you, Captain, but I can feel it in my heart that if you leave, you will never return. I do not wish that on my conscience.
Maddox sat stock still, finally understanding the nature of her refusal. She did not want to risk him again. For some unknown reason, that tightened his throat. Even so, he forced out words.
If the Xerxes system is that dangerous,
Maddox said,
Port Admiral Hayes needs reinforcements.
Starship Victory is the perfect vessel for the strange system. You know that's true, ma'am. I feel the Lord High Admiral would agree with me. I think you realize he would, too, which is why you don't want to ask him.
I realize no such thing,
O'Hara said.
We can't afford to have such a dangerous star system so near Earth, Maddox said. It's 83 light-years in 11 jumps using the Lahmer points.
I'm well aware of the distance, Captain.
Ma'am, I'm touched for your concern regarding me. I appreciate it.
I don't believe that. Therefore, I ask you to prove me wrong by listening to me. What is the old saying? Actions speak louder than words.
I realize that, but Ludendorff has proved critical time and again. We desperately need the man's knowledge. I know you know that. He has the location of the throne world. That in itself is worth the risk.
The Brigadier sat quietly ingesting the news, finally saying,
That is important. Very well. We can send someone else to fetch him. There is no one else who will succeed in this but me and Starship Victory.
The Iron Lady put both hands on the desk. The redness in her eyes had departed.
You think this is strictly emotional on my part. I assure you that isn't so. I have studied the signs and listened carefully to your tale. I think a builder lies behind this. You have sparked their interest in you.
Ma'am, that's far too fanciful.
No, O'Hara said. I have read Dr. Rich's report, the one she is giving now. I agree with her that the signs down in the mid-Atlantic show the builders walked the earth in our early history. The pyramids are the last example of their presence. Perhaps more interestingly, the lost city of Atlantis is their fallen abode.
I'm unfamiliar with the topic.
O'Hara shook her head. Captain, this is a dangerous moment in human history. It could be a fulcrum point. Pressure applied at the wrong spot could tip the balance in the wrong way. These past few years, we have survived amazing shocks. The new men appeared out of the beyond, smashing our fleets and conquering our planets. You found the great antidote, an ancient alien starship of unique technologies. This starship you used with utmost skill, allowing Admiral Fletcher to save half of Fifth Fleet while smashing the new men's invasion armada. After that, Star Watch had a fighting chance against the demoralizing and frightening foe, superior to us in every way. But no, another shock appeared, the alien destroyer. It burned to the bedrock every planet in the New Arabia system, destroying the heart of the Wahhabi Caliphate and annihilating the bulk of their war fleet. The destroyer swept away an easy quarter of humanity's fighting ships, meaning we were going to have a much harder time attacking the new men. Fortunately, the Windsor League and others have joined us in a grand crusade against the enemy. It's still possible we can defeat the mysterious supermen hiding in the beyond. Knowing the location of the throne world, I agree, that is vital to our war effort, but our other intelligence operatives can hurry to the Xerxes system and inform Hayes.
That's quite a speech, ma'am.
I'm not finished, she said. There is one deadly ingredient in all this that frightens me terribly. Strand. The ancient Methuselah man is deceptive beyond anything I've experienced. He is ultimately devious, and I believe you frighten him. Now why is that, Captain?
Maddox said nothing, not sure where she was taking this.
You have thwarted Strand several times, a feat almost beyond measure. We have discovered that he created the Methuselah people, and he created the new men. Why has Strand done these things?
We know why, ma'am.
I don't agree. I think we know what he wants us to believe.
No. I think we uncovered the truth. Strand did these things because he believes there are alien species out there, the Swarm in particular, that could annihilate humanity. The Methuselah people and the new men were his way of improving the species so we could face the terrible enemy.
Strand is evil, Captain. I know because he sent the alien destroyer against Earth.
That was a monstrous crime. He will do anything he can to win, not to save humanity.
Why then?
That is the question we need to solve. We have a breathing space. The new men and Strand with them, whether in conjunction or not, I don't think anyone on our side knows. In any case, they used up their sleeper cells on Earth. For the first time, we are united, without Strand's agents working against us. Humanity must close its fist, as the saying goes, and strike hammer blows against the right target. We must no longer slap our enemies in the face with an open hand, merely stinging them to greater action.
So far, I agree with your analysis.
When we strike the decisive blow, we will need victory. Even better would be 10 victories, and even better than that would be 100.
There's no question about that, Maddox said.
The Commonwealth and Windsor League have superior industrial might compared to the new men. We must use that, outproducing our genetic enemy. Yet would it not be even better to outproduce them with superior ships?
It would indeed.
That is why we must keep victory in Earth orbit as we laboriously attempt to reverse engineer the ancient weapon systems. If I had my way, we would tear the starship apart piece by piece. The survival of human existence might well depend on it.
I can't agree to that, ma'am.
I know you.